Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, we are back together after
2 weeks. It's been a long.
I've missed you. You look re-energized.
So tan. Do you.
We both had our beach spring breaks, and we are excited to be back together here. And also, we got Silent Phil in the ones and twos, so the band is back together. Sherry, today's special guest is the Cincinnati Firefighter Union President, Matt Alter. Really looking forward to having him on. We got a lot of great questions, I think, for him. But first, Sherry, you're back, and you're sprinting, and you're cranking out stories like crazy. Every time I click on a story on our Cincinnati app, it's a Sherry Coolidge byline. And there I was last night winding down, and I click on a story about a place at the banks called Gala Park, and it's a Sherry Coolidge story about the city filing a lawsuit against this relatively new bar establishment at the banks, seeking to have it declared a nuisance. What is going on with Gala Park at the banks? Am I saying that right, by the way? Gala Park?
Okay. Gala Park. You know, it's just steps from the ballpark, and it has a fairly large space in the banks. And all that has been said around, like, re-energizing the banks and what they're doing to really draw people, the outdoor drinking district, I haven't heard nary a word about Gala Park. I mean, every once in a while I know somebody who went there, but I haven't heard much about it. Somebody passed along a lawsuit yesterday, kind of late in the day, in which the city outlined alleging all of these nuisance problems at this bar, like just months of like underage drinking, sale of alcohol to minors, fights. It talks about someone who has a gun in the bar and what they're doing to kind of crack down on like a nuisance. And it was a reminder of, I have to say, of a role that a city does play in something like this. Like, the city has a lot of power. And if there's problem, you know, area, I've seen it happen with houses. You've seen it in apartment buildings where the manager, you know, is not doing what they're supposed to do. They take these nuisance actions, and they're very serious, in which you go to court and you ask a judge. You seek to declare a business or, you know, a place a nuisance. You have it shut down. The lawsuit literally asks for it to be padlocked. That's a word in the lawsuit.
Yeah.
For a year. And it's incredible in which they're trying to reinvigorate the banks. It just says how serious the city is about what's going on there, that they would, you know, put a padlock on something and try and shut it down. Now, I have to say, we have no response. This is very new at this point, from the manager or the management or even the property owner at the bank. So we're working to kind of get those responses, but we will see this play out in court. And it was big news at the banks at a time where they're trying to really reinvigorate it.
Do you see it as you can't help but, and this is just me, and I want to ask you this. So there's been so many issues with different establishments at the banks, not necessarily over these types of issues, but, you know, restaurants coming and going and you know, restaurants struggling to make it. Obviously, you know, there was Toby Keith's right, I guess, next door to where this Gala Park is now, had a lot of issues. Is it another PR hit for the entire banks project? Do you see it that way? Or is it, you know, sort of in the bigger picture of the banks, how do you see this story?
I do think it's a PR hit in which the people kind of be piling on about it. But at the same time, it also is a reminder of the banks struggling. At this point in the life of the banks, everyone who kind of makes decisions about it should understand what works and what doesn't. Although I have to say, on its face, if you look at what Gala Park is, it seems like it is the thing that would work, right? But why are things still really coming and going? They haven't really figured out the secret formula to making the banks work. And maybe it is this outdoor drinking district, which has proved very popular with the nice weather. Like, it is, if you have a ribbon cutting and the weather is really nice, they will come.
You know, and that brings me to the thought, like, is Gala Park, what is is it upscale? Is it a sports bar?
It describes itself as upscale, like dining, entertainment. You can have events there. Like, it is a large space. And I think this is telling about what Gala Park is. They're putting one in Short North up in Columbus.
Okay.
So if you kind of like, and you know, honestly, I think the Banks looks at Short North a little bit. Like, if the Banks was a person, you'd look at Short North and be a little jealous.
With much envy.
Yes. And so if Gala Park is seen as like fitting in up at Short North, that seems to be what its brand and identity is. And so we'll kind of see what happens in court here.
My take on the Banks restaurant thing is, everyone should call Jim Mooring and say, how have you gotten it done, Jim? Because the Holy Grail is the Holy Grail of the Banks. Yes. I mean, it's like it has withstood the test of time. It's a great – I just had a beer there last week. It's a great place.
I think part of his key to success – I was thinking about this after we had him on the podcast. And it was
two episodes ago. You and Burl.
Great conversation. He's so involved. He's there all the time. Like, when you think about the Holy Grail, you think about Jim. Like, they're one and the same. It's his brand, his personality, and the level of caring into a spot. It's not just a restaurant. It's his restaurant.
That's right. Great stuff, Sherry. We'll keep following your coverage on that at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter and obviously on Cincinnati.com and in the Inquirer. But now, let's jump over and bring our special guest, Matt Alter. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm pleased to welcome to our podcast for the first time the president of the Cincinnati Firefighters Union, Local 48, Matt Alter. Matt, happy spring to you. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. You know, can't complain. Weather's finally breaking, and it's good to see people out and about.
Sherry is she's loaded for bear with questions today. I see she's got a long list of things here she wants to ask you about.
You know, I think that's because this really, you know, what's going on with the fire department and at a time when we need a new chief and the budget is coming up. There's been a lot of talk about the fire department. So I don't think this is probably the place for a rapid fire interview, but we definitely talk about what's going on.
I was joking a little bit.
I will say, I think that people, you know, when these big stories happen that involve the fire department, you really are the voice of the fire department, and you have been for years. How long have you been the union president?
So this is my fifth term. Actually, I'm going on almost 10 years. Yeah, it's going on. Yeah, it's hard to believe. Going on almost 10 years. I served as vice president for 2 years before that. And it was kind of trial by fire early on in my vice presidency because, not long after I got elected vice president to this local, the Senate Bill 5, campaign, or the Senate Bill 5 issue kicked up in the state of Ohio. That was really my first kind of dive, my foray. I was sent up to Columbus to, hey, they're introducing this legislation. We're not sure what it's about. And when I came back from Columbus, I had all sorts of notes to report on, and then we saw how that went. And ever since then, it's been a whirlwind since then.
And it is political at times. You don't necessarily think that to yourself when you're like, oh, the fire union president advocates for the firefighters, of course. But it has some, you know, political tinges to it. Yes, trial by fire with that one. But we're seeing it now. And so we might as well just go there right now. Issue 3 is on the ballot. This is the affordable, we've talked about it on the podcast before, the affordable housing charter amendment that requires, and people get on this on Twitter about this, at least $50 million a year from the city, you know, budget somehow, some way to be put towards affordable housing. And there's a lot of worry about that. And so can you tell me where your union is on this issue?
Absolutely. Issue 3 has been a difficult one for the firefighters and the firefighters union. You know, the nature of the job that we do, both as firefighters serving the city of Cincinnati and as union members and in my respective role as the president of the union, it's tough to you know, to take a stand and to urge people to vote no on issue three. We're not against affordable housing. We're not against many of the items that are contained within the charter amendment. The concern that we have is it's what, at what cost, and what's going to happen to the overall city budget, particularly, I'll be honest with you, with the firefighters and other valuable services that are used every day, our health clinics, our rec centers, and so many other things that argument can be made because we offer those services. It does reduce the stress and does reduce some of the burden on the fire department. And so, you know, it was after very long discussion and thought by both the Executive Board of Local 48 and the rank and file membership that we did take a stance on this, because it's just too much. You know, there's a million, I guess, analogies that we could use to describe this. But, you know, this is literally signing a lease for an apartment without having a job. It's getting a mortgage for a house and not getting the promotion. And that's what this is this is an unfunded mandate on the city to provide, quote, affordable housing, which, like I said, on its premise is not a bad thing, but not at the expense of what we're literally talking about is very basic services. And
so we have heard, I do want to ask you this, because this is sure. Okay, here's the editor question. Because, you know, we have heard the threat before. Oh, there's a deficit. There's going to be layoffs. Now, this was a lot more serious talk back in the Mallory administration with the, you know, the Great Recession and what was going on there. But then we still have heard it, you know, in this term under Cranley with like, oh, the budget, there's this shortfall and we don't want to have layoffs and, you know, those dire warnings that never come to be. Is it true this time?
So, going back to kind of the brief bio I gave, I've been around Senate Bill 5. A couple years later, we had issue 4 in Cincinnati, which was the attempt to you know, basically decimate and get rid of the Cincinnati pension system and a number of other issues. And I would say this is, to your point about firefighters being involved in politics, we're very selective on what we do get involved in. And it's for good reason, because realistically, we want to just keep our head down and do our job. So when we take a stand on something and we take, you know, a very bold stance like this to, you know, encourage people to vote no, it's because of the absolute dire consequences of this. I don't think it can be understated enough. The city budget, you know, the general fund budget, which is where basically all of the pretty much the services that most people see come out of the general fund budget. And I think that's important, because I do know that there's a talking point from the other side of this campaign about it's, you know, only 5% of the city budget. Well, it's a bit disingenuous, because that's factoring in things like waterworks and MSD, which cannot be used. Those funds cannot be used for items other than waterworks and MSD enterprise services. So when you're talking about something that is equivalent to approximately 12.5 to 15% of the city's operation budget, you know, costs have to come somewhere. And even if they don't come out of, let's say, operating budget at 100%, the capital, if it to come out of the capital budget, would be just as destructive. This last year, for example, the city of Cincinnati has 26 active firehouses, which means there's 26 fire engines, 12 ladder trucks, 2 heavy rescue trucks, 12 ambulances. That's kind of our front line, what you see every day out on the street, about 200 firefighters every day, 24 hours a day. This past year, because of cuts to the capital budget, we were able to replace one fire engine and an ambulance. You know, our at that case, it's going to take the fire department over 25 years just to replace their frontline apparatus. And just because of the number of runs that we see, the number of calls that we get on the fire department, fire truck only lasts us 8 or 9 years. So I bring this up as an example to say something has to give somewhere. And you can't just simply say, well, we're going to take it from another budget or another pot. It is an unfunded mandate. If this was the federal, if this was the state or federal government doing the same thing to us here at a local level, we would all, you know, lock up in arms and say, hey, you can't, you know, this is an unfunded mandate being put on us by, you know, Big Brother. And that's what this is. This is, it's an unfunded mandate. Now, I know it's citizen driven and I get that. And again, unions more than anybody appreciate the power of the people and what it means to unite for a common good and common cause. But I really think that in this case, not enough stakeholders were brought in to really look at this, to make this something palatable that could pass and could provide, you know, a really good service to those that need.
To put it more succinctly, if there are cutbacks and there's layoffs and there's not, then that means there's not 200 firefighters to be on the street every day. And that means a firehouse might close one day. And then what we have, which we actually had when Mayor John Cranley took over, and it did put to an end, which was the rolling brownouts of the fire departments. Like, there would be equipment put out of service. And so, like, the next closest firehouse would go. And if your house is on fire, that's not exactly what you want to hear. Like, the next, you know, the closest one couldn't come today, but the next one did. So, I mean, that's really what we're getting at here. When we talk about the idea that there might be layoffs, it's real consequences to citizens, right?
100%. So we are down right now, the fire department, just through attrition, just because of retirements. The fire departments, we're down 70 firefighters where we were. We peaked around in July. We had 859 firefighters in July, which is over our authorized strength. The authorized strength for the fire department is 841 uniformed men and women. That's basically the maximum number of firefighters that city council and the budget and all them say we can have, you know, per them. So we peaked in July of 19 at 859, and we're down below 790 as we sit here and talk today. And how are we able to avoid brownouts in that today? It's because of overtime. And honestly, it's because of federal CARES money that we've been able to do this stuff. The firefighters are exhausted. They're tired. They go out there and put 1,000% in every day. But we're starting to see signs of fatigue. We are starting to see signs of stress, and you know, the seams are coming apart. And this will only exacerbate it. This will only make it worse, because it's $50 million a year in perpetuity. So things like future recruit classes and again, adjustment to authorized strength, I think it's great. I, as somebody that's basically a lifelong Cincinnati, I live in the city, I work in the city, you know, I shop, I hang out in the city. This is my town, just like it is everybody, you know, many of the folks that are so passionate about this. This is my city, just like it's their city. I don't want to see this happen, but we haven't seen any growth to the fire department. The last authorized strength increase happened in the fire department over 15 years ago. And since then, we've added ambulances, we've added positions as a result of line of duty death report from Daryl Gordon. And those positions, again, came without an increase in the authorized strength. So there's been no growth in the fire department, even though we need growth. We need more ambulances on the street. We need more fire companies out there, especially particularly over on the west side of town. We need ambulances, particularly on the east side of town. And we can't even talk about growth in the fire department because we're basically treading water. We're basically wearing floaties, doing what we can to keep our head above water. And this just raises the tide. I mean, that we will literally be drowning in high seas when it comes to that, doing what we can to keep up. Because it's important to note that your firefighters in Cincinnati are also your closest paramedics and your EMTs. Everybody in the Cincinnati Fire Department has to be an EMT. About half the fire department are emergency medical technicians. Half of them are paramedics. So we're dual role. So your closest fire truck is also your closest paramedics. So when we talk about browning companies out, the impact is greater than just losing potential fire protection. It's also losing the closest paramedics to you as well, which is certainly a concern. It should be a concern for everybody, as well as the fire protection. You know, I have to mention this, and they're just simple facts. You don't believe me? People can look it up. They can read the Cincinnati Inquirer, and you report on it. So far, this, you know, basically the first quarter of 2021, we've had six fire deaths so far this year. All of 2020, we had two. You know, we're on pace for a very, you know, a high year of number of victims of fires.
When I read these stories, I do have a question.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, you know, I think it's like anything else. You know, if I had the answer to why, I don't know that I'd be president of the union. I might be in some other position. But, you know, talking to our Fire Prevention Bureau and the Risk Reduction Unit, that's headed up by Chief Mike Washington, who does a great job over there. But he does a great job, again, with limited resources. The total number of folks in the Cincinnati Fire Department, fire specialists whose sole job is to do fire inspections, especially for businesses, hospitals, things like that, we have six for the entire city of Cincinnati, six. And, you know, with, I think what we're, you know, I think what we're speculating, again, this is speculation.
How many should you have?
You know, so the report is done on that, and I think that's the thing is, you know, trying to look at comparable cities on what they have. You know, there again, the Daryl Gordon Line of Duty Death Report recommended hiring, you know, basically doubling that number. And what that allows is it allows for, you know, the specialists to do a much more to get to these buildings more often, to do more thorough inspections and things like that. These, you know, the fire deaths for this year were happening in residential areas. They're not in commercial and industrial buildings. You know, to your point on it and asking the why, you know, what we're thinking, you know, many of the things, you know, that we're seeing is folks are working from home. A lot more people are working from home more often. And to be honest with you, you know, there are many fires that are being investigated by the fire investigation unit as far as origin and cause. And unfortunately, I can't get into those because those are still open cases. But we're seeing some trends. What I can say, and unfortunately, I know I sound pretty veiled or pretty, you know, I'm not trying to hide anything. It's, again, I can't put too much out, though. We're seeing some of the trends that we saw in the mid-2000s. Let's just say that, you know, we are seeing some stuff of maybe some things that might have been purposeful set. As far as the fires with fire victims, were they purposeful set or not? Again, the fire investigation unit is still investigating that. But I think that this all ties in together. Firefighting, emergency medical service, this is one of those jobs like our public services. It's like our home health care nurses and our sanitation workers and things like that. There are still hands-on jobs in the United States. These are hands-on, blue-collar, get-dirty jobs. They require people. You know, there's only so much that technology can do within our profession. But at the end of the day, you know, it's actually physical labor, manual labor to get this job done. And, you know, this issue 3 really threatens that. It threatens the very basis, the very foundation of why the Cincinnati Fire Department was founded. 168 years ago, the city council got together, said, hey, the fire department used to be funded by insurance companies. Only those that had the money got fire protection. In 1853, council said, enough. Doesn't matter if you're black, white, rich, poor. Everybody in the city of Cincinnati is entitled to fire protection. Yeah. And the city of Cincinnati created the first professional fire department in the United States, the Cincinnati Fire Department. So 168 years ago, city council had the foresight to say, hey, fire service is a fundamental program of the city of Cincinnati. It's a fundamental service that has been in a continuous existence for 168 years. And, you know, a thing like issue 3, it really threatens the very foundation of one of the basic tenets of your local government.
Matt, this is great stuff and great insight and great. I really appreciate you sharing how this on a basic level affects what's going to really affect firefighting services and public safety. One more thing I want to ask you on issue 3 before we jump to something else. Is there's been a lot of talk out there about this is an effort to defund the police and, you know, cut into public safety. And with the police and fire and 911 system, that's about 65% of the operating budget every year. Do you, from your standpoint and your membership, do you think this issue 3 and the people behind it, do you think it is a deliberate agenda to try to defund or cut into public safety?
I don't know. I don't know what their motives are. I mean, I know some of the groups and some of the folks that are involved in these things. Again, these are many of the same folks that we've worked with side by side on some of these past issues. I think that many of the folks that are involved in this are very passionate about their cause. They're very sincere about what they're trying to do. I think there is a level of frustration at City Hall. Again, as a city employee and as a union president, I could, you know, talk for the next week and a half on frustrations at City Hall and what they do and don't do and what they promise and under deliver on.
I'm here for that. We'll have you on again.
right. So I don't know, you know, I don't know if that's their underlying motivation. What I do know is that the potential fallout is there and that no matter what happens, you know, the city is going to have police service. That's just, you know, the city is going to need some sort of police department and police service. And $50 million, when you're talking about, again, 12.5% to 15% of the city budget, You know, we have to sit down in the room and just talk as grownups and just be adults and say, let's just be honest. This is going to impact every service and every department of the city of Cincinnati. And so if that is an attempt by them, you know, it's not going to work because everybody's going to end up getting cuts from it. Again, I don't want to speculate on what their underlying motivation is.
Well, it all comes at a very important time, which is there's the selection of a new fire chief, Roy Winston, retired. And I was actually caught off guard by that because I just hadn't really heard much about it. But, you know, when you look at his years of service, he has them in. And so does the fire union kind of weigh in on what they might want? Like, what are you looking for in a fire chief?
No. So the firefighters union, to the point that we weigh in, and again, I'm given direction by the body, by the rank and file. They kind of give me direction on where to go on this. And so our position on this is that we have qualified candidates within the Cincinnati Fire Department to promote to the position of fire chief. And the reason that that's important is, as you recall, back in 2001, there was some change to the city charter that now allows the city manager to appoint assistant chiefs and the fire chiefs to the assistant chief and chief of both the police and fire departments. It was a different issue campaign. I don't want to confuse your listeners with all these issue numbers. But, you know, the charter was changed that allows appointment. It took those positions basically out of civil service. You know, at that time, you know, the local at that time, it was prior to me even being on Cincinnati, wasn't necessarily supportive of that. And I think, again, that an argument could be made on whether that's a good system or not. I know that there was a lot of controversy when the former police chief was let go about, you know, the ability to appeal the decision of the city manager and et cetera. And I'm kind of over in the corner, you know, raising my hand as high as I can go saying, we used to have this system. It's called civil service. That used to be a system in place to provide a checks and balance so you don't have political hirings and arbitrary firings. And if that's what, you know, the member felt or the person that was let go felt, they would at least have a system. That's gone now. With that being said, is the assistant fire chiefs are members of Local 48. So yeah, we're going to advocate that we have people, you know, qualified people within the fire department. They know the city. They know how we operate. They know how we go to work. You know, when you've been around 168 years, there is some sense of tradition, and not all tradition is bad. I mean, I think you can balance progress and tradition at the same time. And, you know, we think we have, you know, qualified candidates to do that within the Cincinnati Fire Department.
When do you think we'll see the selection?
My understanding is I think there, if I'm not mistaken, resumes and applications were due by Tuesday. They were supposed to be turned into one of the assistant city managers, Chris Bingham. And so to begin that process, I'm not even sure exactly what that process will look like. The chief has indicated to the members and to myself that he's going to be retiring in July. So we hope before July that somebody will be named. And, you know, the next chief, you know, is going to have quite there again. A lot of the issues I've already discussed, they're going to have that to deal with. How do we, you know, continue to, you know, progress through the fire service while maintaining safety, but trying to grow the organization with a shrinking budget? You know, a lot of balls in the air right now.
No, but I mean, we're really going to write about this. Like, we'll be looking at this, you know, the candidates. I mean, follow us at Cincinnati.com. Like, these are like the kind of stories that we'll be having in the next couple of months here.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, qualifications and different things have changed throughout the years. You know, certain different criteria and factors have played a role in the different positions that are there. You know, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out for sure. I mean, this is going to be, this is a very interesting year. People have asked me, you know, well, how things are going. And between the coronavirus, the chief leaving, the budget issue three, new council, new mayor, you know, the best advice I try to offer the firefighters is to take a deep breath. And that's what sometimes lost is, it has to be mentioned that we are very, very supportive and appreciative of our community. They've always been great to us from, you know, Jane Q Public walking down the street to, you know, the business owner. They've always, you know, greeted us and been great to us. your firefighters are consistent. You know, this is a career for us. You know, we're here 30, 35 years. Politicians and bureaucrats come and go. And so that's kind of the balance. That's the consistency that the local tries to provide, is that some sense of normalcy so that we can continue to operate and provide service, you know, as smoothly and seamlessly as possible.
You segued that nicely, because my question is going to be, we've been talking about a lot of serious things, and I wanted to lighten it up a little bit. Wanted to just ask you how long you've been in with the fire department and as a firefighter. And I know you've been union president for a while, but on the firefighting side, or just overall, what do you love most about your job?
Yeah, so I was one of the few that was one of the few that actually had prior time in the fire service before I came to the city of Cincinnati. I worked out in the suburbs in Hamilton County and out in Claremont County before I got hired on Cincinnati. This was the fire department I always wanted to work at. I'd taken tests for other metro cities across the country. It's a very selective process. We actually have an active recruit process going on right now. So for those that are listening, check out the city of Cincinnati website and make sure you get your application in for the fire department. But it's a pretty selective process. When I took the test back in 2002, 2003, I think there was over 3,000 applicants, if I'm not mistaken, and we hired a recruit class with 40 people in it. So very, very tough process to get on. But I've been on Cincinnati just over 16 years, and June will actually mark 22 years in the fire service total. Your other part of your question was, what do you love most and what do you like? It's new every day. It's something new every single day on the fire department. I like being busy. I like helping people. I like getting out in our community. I've told people this before. I'm a Cincinnati boy through and through. There's not one corner of the city that I'm scared to walk in. I'm scared to be around. There is something called street smarts, and you got to have that. But I love seeing the new and little hidden pockets and little parts of our city, and being able to interact with the community and interact with the public and let them know that we're here for them. It's just been a really, really cool experience. Certainly the thrill of fighting fires is always there. I mean, that's probably 90%+ of firefighters are here for that. And then the medical side, the emergency medical side, is a really neat opportunity as well. You know, we serve a city of just over 300,000 permanent residents, but when you account for the daily swell of workers and visitors in our community, we're kind of the little department that's required to serve the bigger city. And it always keeps you on your toes. There's always something going on, that's for sure.
Great stuff, Matt. Really appreciate you taking the time and sharing about what's going on at the police department, your approach for your members, issue 3, firefighters, and your career as well, and just the passion that you have for the job. And really appreciate you sharing that with our listeners today.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you having me on, for sure.
Here comes the budget. I'll see you at City Hall.
No doubt. Yes, that's there again, that's the other thing that we keep forgetting about as well, is the budget. And again, that's I talked about the other thing. This could be a whole nother issue that we can talk about, because again, we pull our hair out every single time when it comes budget time. It seems right now that we're the ones over kind of in the, we're kind of standing there waving our arms, but being overlooked of like, there are real needs in the fire department and real critical needs that we need. And again, not saying that many of the programs and services that are being rolled out or promised to the citizens aren't worthy, but you have to cover the bases. You know, we know that we have to cover our basics first before we can expand.
Amen to that. Thanks, Matt.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again to Matt Alter for joining us today. And Sherry, right there at the end, I know this is our fun segment, but you mentioned something about the budget. Is something on your mind?
Well, a lot of people have been asking me, like, we're talking about the spending of the stimulus money, but the city budget really is coming, and it's been, hit by the pandemic. But here's where I'm at on this. I don't see, and issue three too, you know, putting it in the spotlight. Yes, there's fat in government. Yes, yes. But I don't see large swaths of it. Anything that would really make a difference. I feel like the city is short-staffed. When I look at things department by department and I talk to people in those departments and how things are going, we, you know, if you look at buildings and inspections, we need more inspectors. That gets to quality of life in the communities. That's right. You know, people complain about litter and cleaning all of that up. And you want your health department, you have to have these health clinics and they need to be properly staffed. These home, you know, nursing programs gets to, you know, the infant deaths and like every part of the city budget really is doing a function that you don't want to say, I don't want to do that anymore. And it's just, I don't look at the police department either, I have to tell you, and think to myself, wow, they shouldn't be doing that. That's an extra thing they do. You know, and a lot is said, you know, the salaries of the police officers make up really like 90% of that budget, and that's true. But do people, I mean, the idea of like cutting those salaries, not that that's even possible, but you have to pay for what you want. Like if we want the best trained officers, if you want to do all of the things that get to the collaborative and fund, you know, the citizen complaint authority, so there's some accountability, all of those things take money. And so I don't look at the city budget and think, and no one's asking me really, by the way, this is why these are your council people. And when people are in the voting booth this year, the mayor and the city council members, ask them about these things and see really what they say.
I'm glad you brought that up because that's what was on my mind here, was that where are the mayoral candidates on this fair? With what you just said right there sounds like a fantastic discussion and platform that should be being discussed in this mayor's race as we record here on Wednesday. Early voting began yesterday and is well underway for this May 4th primary. You know, we're not going to get too far down the rabbit hole on that, but that sounds like a fantastic issue for the mayoral candidates to be discussing.
It's easy to say what you will do. It's harder to say what you won't do anymore.
Boom. Drop the mic, folks.
All right. It's time for that.
You just turned your head and put your hands in your hips. We're not video. We're just audio, but I'm sharing that because you're like,
it's time for that. So drop Cincinnati the mic moment of the week, I think.
Yes.
You know what? You have one. You have a very sweet moment, and it doesn't involve food or chili or beer. Not that that's a bad – those are bad things. But I was looking at your Facebook post, and I thought, you know what? This is – it's a rite of passage. Tell me what you were thinking this weekend and what happened.
It does involve the Reds and baseball and father and son. And my oldest son, Reed, who's 8, is playing – kids pitch baseball for the first time this year and didn't get to play ball last year, obviously because of the pandemic, and is really into it and hasn't really been. I mean, he's played soccer, he's played baseball, t-ball, and coaches pitch and swimming and all. You know, we try to let him do all these different things, but he's got a great coach, Coach Mark and Coach John, and these guys are. They're encouraging them to just really love baseball. And so the homework, they usually have practice on Thursdays, Tuesdays and Thursdays, but they didn't have last Thursday didn't have practice because of opening day. And so the homework was to watch the opening day game. And Reed was so into it. And he watched so much of it. And it wasn't watching as I'm thinking like, okay, this is just, you know, the ambiance and the event and the, but no, we've ever since we're now, what, 5 games into the season, we've watched some or all parts or all of every game so far. And it's being driven by him. He's so into it. He's so into the players. He's a left-hander. So he's really interested in the left-handed batters, Joey Votto, the left-handed pitchers and how their forms are. And it's just, it's so fun. And it's so fun to, like, you know, have that moment of watching just, you know, here we are sitting on our couch last night and talking about baseball and the game and Joey Votto and Nick Castellanos and I mean, I haven't been this interested in the Reds for several years. I used to be a huge baseball fan, but just with kids and job and all these things, there's only so much time you have for, especially baseball. Baseball is quite an investment, 162 games. But I'm like, oh man, this has really sparked my interest in the Reds again for the first time. And I can think of since the early 2000s, honestly, and it's been really cool.
I mean, I'm seeing this all over. It wasn't just your post. I think, honestly, there's just a reminder that this city is a baseball town with or without an opening day parade. Like, that's all the hoopla and that's the fun. But it really is about the fans and their relationship with the team. It's not just about a party. And so I'm seeing that, and I think people are very hopeful, and everybody wants hope right now.
It's also about the bobbleheads.
Oh, yes.
So for those of you who listened last week, and if you didn't listen, go back. Burrell Love, our executive editor, talked about his bobblehead collection. So after we recorded, he took me into his office I'd seen it. We all haven't been in the office a lot in the past year plus, but he had one shelf of bobbleheads back over a year ago, and I've seen that. I'd seen that. He's like, come on in. He's got 4 or 5 shelves of bobbleheads. And that was his project during the pandemic, was to try to get every single bobblehead that is given away. And that's player bobbleheads that has been given away since the first bobblehead was ever given away by the Reds.
And he's a true collector because he has spreadsheet. I love it.
He told me about the spreadsheet. So baseball is in the air. It's all around. And it's great. And the Reds are going off to a great start. So thank you so much for listening to us and keeping this podcast going, and we'll catch you next week.